Okay, so imagine this. You're a lawyer and your state needs something really badly.
Like a resource.
Yeah, like a resource, let's say natural gas
Right.
to keep the hospitals running and people's homes warm in the winter.
Makes sense.
But the next state over the one that produces the resource decides they're going to keep it all for themselves.
Oh, wow.
What happens then?
That's a good question.
Well, that's the kind of legal battle we're diving into today.
Interesting.
The Supreme Court case, Pennsylvania v. West Virginia from 1923.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
It's a foundational case, and it established a key principle for lawyers like you.
I'm listening.
States can't just block essential resources from crossing state lines just because they want to benefit.
Right, so to really grasp what's at stake here, we have to think about the context.
Yeah, take us back.
It's the Roaring Twenties right after World War I.
Okay.
Industries are booming. Energy demands are through the roof.
Makes sense.
And West Virginia is sitting on huge natural gas reserves. So
Ah.
they become a vital supplier for states like Pennsylvania and Ohio.
They need that gas.
They do their economies, their infrastructure. It's all built around having this reliable supply of gas from West Virginia.
Wow, so what happened?
Well, West Virginia starts facing its own growing needs and decides to say, you know what, our people come first.
Oh.
And that's where the legal fight begins.
So that's what we're unpacking today.
Exactly. The legal battle over West Virginia's attempt to prioritize its own consumers.
And for all you law students out there,
Yeah, paying attention.
this case is crucial because it really shows how the Commerce Clause works.
It's a classic.
And that whole question of state versus federal power,
Right, that push-pull.
it's something you're going to deal with throughout your legal careers.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's get into the specifics. What actually started this whole Supreme Court showdown?
Well, it all began with a law that West Virginia passed in 1919.
1919, okay.
This law basically said that natural gas companies operating in West Virginia had to meet the needs of all in-state consumers first.
Okay, so West Virginians first,
Exactly.
and then.
Only after satisfying their own people could these companies sell and transport any extra gas to customers in other states.
Wow, so you've got these massive economic stakes.
Huge.
I mean, we're talking about $300 million invested in gas infrastructure back then.
That's a lot of money.
So, what was the big legal question that the Supreme Court had to answer?
The core issue was, this does a state law that restricts the export of a natural resource.
Like natural gas.
Exactly like natural gas.
To favor its own citizens, does that violate the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution?
It's a fundamental question of balance,
Between.
a state's right to manage its own resources,
Okay.
and the federal government's power over interstate commerce.
That's a tricky one.
It is.
And what did the Supreme Court decide?
Well, the court, in a majority opinion written by Justice Van Devanter, sided against West Virginia.
So they said it was unconstitutional.
He did.
What was their main argument?
They determined that natural gas, once it's taken out of the ground and starts moving through those interstate pipelines,
Yeah.
it becomes an article of interstate commerce.
I see.
And at that point, it falls under the regulatory power of the federal government under the Commerce Clause.
So the key triggers are extraction and interstate transport
That's
for
our,
federal oversight.
according to the majority, yes.
And they also said that the West Virginia law discriminated against interstate commerce.
That's right. They saw it as a direct act of discrimination because it explicitly favored in-state customers.
Okay, so this is where we get into the Dormant Commerce Clause.
A what?
The Dormant Commerce
Oh,
Clause.
right. Can you explain that a little?
Yeah, basically, although the Constitution doesn't explicitly say that states can't regulate interstate commerce, the
Okay.
Commerce Clause implicitly limits their power in this area.
So it's like a hidden restriction.
Yeah, you could say that.
Interesting.
And this idea is called the Dormant Commerce Clause.
Okay.
And it stops states from making laws that put too much of a burden on or discriminate against interstate trade.
Makes sense.
And the court saw West Virginia's law as doing exactly that.
So it was unconstitutional.
Exactly.
Wow.
And Justice Van Devanter also brought up another important point,
But
right?
he was worried about the bigger picture.
What do you mean?
Well, he made this really powerful slippery slope argument.
Okay.
He said, imagine if states could do this, what would stop Pennsylvania from keeping all its coal?
Oh, wow.
Or the Northwest from hoarding its timber?
Right.
Or mining states from keeping all their minerals?
Yeah, it'd be chaos.
Each state would become like its own little economic island.
And the national economy would fall apart.
Exactly.
So the court really wanted to emphasize the idea of national economic unity.
They even said, in commerce, we are a single nation, one and the same people.
Wow, that's a strong statement.
It is. It shows how important they thought free trade between states was.
And that was back in 1923.
That's right.
Now we have something called the Dormant Commerce Clause test.
I've heard of that.
But it wasn't fully laid out back then. Can we still see the beginnings of that test in the court's reasoning in Pennsylvania v. West Virginia?
Oh, absolutely. Even back then, the court was looking at some factors that later became central to the Dormant Commerce Clause test.
Like what?
Well, first, they were really concerned about discrimination against out-of-state consumers.
Like how West Virginia was favoring its own people.
Exactly. That was a major red flag for them.
Makes sense.
Second, they weighed the burden on interstate commerce against whatever local benefits the law was supposed to have.
Okay, so they were trying to see if the good outweighed the bad.
You got it.
And in this case, they decided that the burden on interstate commerce was just too much.
Way too much.
And there's a third part to the modern test, too.
Right. You're thinking about less discriminatory alternatives.
Yes.
That's right.
The court basically said that West Virginia could have addressed its concerns about gas supply without being discriminatory.
Exactly.
Wow.
Well, they could have rationed gas proportionally or just limited overall production.
Without specifically targeting those out-of-state customers.
Exactly.
So the court was signaling that it prefers solutions that don't create economic conflict between states.
That's a good way to put it.
And they're also saying that regulating interstate commerce is really a job for Congress,
Ideally, yes.
not a bunch of different state laws that clash with each other.
A unified approach instead of a patchwork.
Exactly.
I see.
Now, as with a lot of big Supreme Court decisions, there were some dissenting opinions in Pennsylvania v. West Virginia.
Oh, of course, some justices didn't agree with the majority.
Right. So who disagreed and what were their reasons?
Well, three justices dissented: Justice McReynolds, Justice Brandeis, and Justice Holmes.
Okay, and they each had their own reasons for dissenting.
They did.
Starting with Justice McReynolds, what did he say?
His main argument was that the case wasn't justiciable at that time.
What does justiciable mean in this context?
Basically, he thought that the lawsuit was premature.
Premature.
Yeah, he said that West Virginia hadn't actually enforced the law yet.
So no harm had been done.
Right, and Pennsylvania and Ohio hadn't actually suffered any concrete harm yet.
So he thought the court shouldn't get involved until something actually happened.
Exactly. He felt like the court was jumping the gun.
Interesting. What about Justice Brandeis?
Justice Brandeis agreed that the lawsuits were premature.
Okay.
But he also raised a different point about missing parties.
Like who?
The natural gas companies themselves.
Ah.
He pointed out that they weren't part of the lawsuit.
But they're the ones actually transporting and selling the gas.
Yeah, exactly. And Brandeis questioned whether the court could really fix the problem without the gas companies being involved.
I see. So he was concerned about the practicality of the court's decision.
Yeah, he didn't think the court could effectively resolve the issue without all the key players at the table.
That's a valid point. What about Justice Holmes's dissent?
His dissent is the one that gets talked about a lot.
Why is that?
Well, he had a fundamental disagreement with the majority about when natural gas actually becomes interstate commerce.
Okay, so this goes back to that trigger point we talked about.
It does.
Yeah, one.
Holmes argued that states have the power to regulate natural resources that are still within their borders.
Before they cross state lines.
Exactly.
So in his view, natural gas in the ground,
or even gas that's been extracted but not yet shipped out of state,
is still under state control.
That's right.
Interesting. So for Holmes, the moment of extraction wasn't the deciding factor.
Not necessary.
He thought it had to actually start moving across state lines for commercial purposes.
That was his view.
It's a very different way of looking at the Commerce Clause's power.
It is a key difference of interpretation.
Now let's shift gears a bit and talk about why this case from 1923 still matters today.
Sure.
Seems like a very specific case, about natural gas in the early 20th century.
It does seem that way.
But why is it still relevant for law students today?
Well, the specific details might be about natural gas back then,
Right.
but the underlying principles are still super relevant.
Okay.
This case is a really important precedent against what's sometimes called resource nationalism.
Resource nationalism.
It's the idea that states can put their own needs first by blocking essential resources from going to other states.
Even though we're all supposed to be one big economic unit.
Exactly.
And this idea comes up even today.
All the time.
That's like.
The movement of goods and services between states, it's always a hot topic.
Give me an example.
Well, think about what happens during a national emergency.
Like a pandemic.
Yeah, like a pandemic when medical supplies become really scarce.
Okay.
This case suggests that a state probably couldn't make a law that completely bans the export of a vital medical supply.
Even if it's made in their state.
Right. Especially if that supply is already part of the national system and other states desperately need it.
So it gets back to that idea of a unified national market.
It does.
The U.S. is supposed to function as one big market.
Exactly. And states generally can't pass laws that mess with the free flow of essential goods across state lines.
Yeah.
And Pennsylvania v. West Virginia is a key case in supporting that principle.
Absolutely. It's a cornerstone.
So to sum up for our listeners.
Yeah.
The big takeaway from this case is that states can't make laws that unfairly burden or discriminate against interstate commerce.
Right.
Even when they're dealing with their own natural resources.
That's the key point.
This principle is a fundamental part of our national economy.
It is.
And you'll see it again and again in different areas of the law.
For sure.
And now that we've covered all that,
yeah.
Here's a final thought for you all to think about.
Okay.
Remember Justice Holmes' dissenting opinion?
I do.
He had a different view on when a product becomes part of interstate commerce.
Right.
So think about it. When do you think a product made in one state really becomes part of interstate commerce?
Interesting question.
Is it when it's first extracted or when it physically crosses a state border?
Or maybe when it's put up for sale in another state?
It's a question with a lot of nuance. And it's one that still shapes how we understand the Commerce Clause and the balance of power in our federal system.
Something to ponder.
Exact.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course. It was great having you.
It was a great discussion.
Till next time.
Bye.